Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Hello, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. We are getting off to a great start here. I have to tell you right now, I'm cold. I have the windows open. It's about 23 degrees outside, so I'm probably going to be doing some teeth chattering. That being said, I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am honored to share the microphone with the most interesting business leaders who have wonderful stories to share, and they are here on this podcast to share their journeys, their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. In fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was recently written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to now, and has also been mentioned on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. Our topic today, an important one, given it's the end of the year, we're looking 2018 right in the face, and that is how to awaken your entrepreneurial genius with my friend Tony Robleski. Now, Tony is currently the president of Mind Capture Group. His message is designed to help people capture, quotes, more minds and more profits. He is also an in-demand speaker who's given hundreds of presentations in the past decade, a strategic business coach, and a global event promoter with over 20 years of experience in the personal development industry. His second book in the Mind Capture series, and I have, I think, two of his books right now, went number one in three different business categories with Amazon.com and received stunning reviews from a wide range of leaders in marketing, sales, psychology, and academia, and multiple New York Times bestselling authors. Excuse me, hang on just a second. I'm going to be muting as I cough today, apparently. Hit book number four in this series is titled Mind Capture, Leadership Lessons from 10 Trailblazers Who Beat the Odds and Influenced Millions was recently re-released. His work has been featured in various media outlets ranging from Toastmasters International Magazine, the Detroit Free Press, the Fox TV Network, ABC, CNN Radio, NPR, and Entrepreneur Magazine Radio. In addition, he has also served as a faculty member with both the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and CEO Space International. Tony, welcome back to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm so glad to have you here.
Well, thank you, and happy almost 2018, Denise. An honor to be here, and at that shameless introduction, you know, I'm just a guy that would rather be no other place than on the radio right now with you. So here we go.
Oh, thank you. And I was telling, we tried this morning, y'all. We had technical difficulties, so we reschedule for later in the afternoon, and I really appreciate you doing that. But I mentioned in our kind of conversation this morning before we got on the radio that last year this time my final guest of the year was our friend and, you know, another very famous author, Larry Wingate. So you're in very good company. So this year you're my final guest of the year.
Well, thank you. And Larry's awesome. I've interviewed him a couple of times, and boy, you talk about no pressure on me. So let's deliver on this thing.
Well, yeah, that kind of went without saying, right?
Yeah.
Listen, we have a lot to talk about. I do have two of your books. I've read them. And actually on my list of year-end things to do is to actually write a whole ton of Amazon reviews because for some reason I haven't done them. I've got them written out, but, you know, one of your books at least is on my list to write a review for today. So anybody's listening, if you have been gifted with books from your favorite authors or you've read them, take some time this quiet New Year's weekend and write those reviews. They're very important.
Well, thank you, and I agree with you. And Denise, as we get rolling here, I want to thank everybody listening in live. You've got a great audience and very good reputation. I do a lot of interviews, and I don't take them all. So this was an honor when you reached out to me, and it's just we're going to have a good time with us. and those that may listen to the podcast later, grab a pen and paper, because we're going to cover a lot of ground, as you mentioned. And I always want to make sure, if I'm teaching over the airwaves, you know, the ones and zeros economy, or live face-to-face or one-to-one, that people walk out with one or two ideas from me, that they go, wow, okay, you know, if I'm driving my car, I'm listening to a bus, or I'm driving in my car, I'm at my desk, or, you know, on a lunch break, they leave and go, man, he didn't waste my time. And there's one or two things I took. So that's really the setup of where I want to take us today, that time is extremely valuable, and I want to respect that.
Oh, excellent. We have a whole lot of things to cover. So you know what I think I'm going to do, because this really is about what you are bringing to the audience. So you sent me a list of things that we wanted to talk about, but I'm not going to even ask you about those. I'm just going to let you run with it.
Wow.
It's all yours.
Well, where do I start? I just want to begin and again thank everyone for their time, but I want to come out and really grab everyone by the jugular here, because the gift of time and attention, distraction lurks every corner. Denise, my whole premise the last 13, 14 years out full-time doing this is that we're in a marketing battle for attention, or what I call mind capture. And little did I know, writing the book 15, 16 years ago, an original manuscript, A, what the hell I was even doing. You kind of write with your intuition and the knowledge and wisdom you have, and then your own perspective and your own stories. You kind of layer that together. So all the writers out there and speakers listening in now, live or later, that's kind of how we get started. There's no typical blueprint, or there wasn't 15, 16 years ago. The internet was very, very primitive. If you remember the old dial-up tones and AOL and you've got mail, it was a different universe, a different way of creating. Now, there's all sorts of shortcuts to create, but I go back and you sometimes go, huh, I must have been onto something. But the whole premise, what I've been teaching, is this thing called mind capture, which is simply this. How do you stand out, get attention, in a world crowded with too many choices and demands placed on people's time? Two questions I ask every live audience in the world that I'll share right now as we record is, number one, how many of you ever lied to a salesperson? And all the hands go up, and some people sheepishly won't put their hands up. And then the second question I ask is, how many of you ever lied to a salesperson? All the hands go up, everyone kind of laughs. Here's the deal, and it ties into the whole premise of, you know, 14, 15 years, a few books later, several hundred flights, and all sorts of growth, is that the attention battle is getting worse, Denise. You're seeing, as Chris Anderson talks about in his phenomenal work, The Long Tail book, groundbreaking, that the long tail is now you have thousands and thousands of channels. You have micro niches within niches, and getting into a focus for more than 10 to 15 seconds is a real challenge. I knew it early on when I sold 15, 20 years ago, telecom services door to door. I recruited agents. I trained them. That's sort of how the training bug came. I also worked in advertising for a few years, not like the show Mad Men, Denise, but, you know, worked with a small boutique agency working with casinos and realtors and entrepreneurs and nonprofits. So it was like the marketing buffet to get involved with all these different types of businesses, for-profit, nonprofit, and all levels of growth. And that was the genesis 15, 16 years ago. And it takes us up to today. A big reason why we're exchanging ideas here and wisdom on this interview is we're going to look at a book I wrote that came out, ironically, in 2011. So as we record on the breaking point of late 2017, early birth of 18 for this podcast, why in the heck did I re-release a book that I wrote basically 8 or 9 years ago? Because the formations were written in 09, 010, the book released in 2011. And I want to get it right out front, because it's going to be a central area we'll recover today, is the book that many of my fans have read say, that's your best one. And it's hard, Denise, and many of our folks are writers and content creators and bloggers that are listening in and speakers, is you're too close to it and you beat the hell out of it. So I'm going to go really, really transparent today and give everyone a treat of, let's go down the rabbit hole. Let's go multiple layers deeper. And what I mean by that is we're our own worst enemy. We could get 99 positive reviews, and the one negative review, our human ego will sit there and focus on the critic that revels and enjoys spending time picking apart our dream versus their own. And I say that also everywhere I speak, because critics, especially online, love to troll, love to throw hate and evil and crush people. And typically, it's not that they're bad people, they're just internally unhappy, and their unhappiness spreads. So So we have a decision to make. Do we respond to that, or do we focus on our inner genius? The title of the book is Mind Capture, and the subtitle is How to Awaken Your Entrepreneurial Genius in a Time of Great Economic Change. That's an evergreen subtitle. Now, the book was written coming off the Great R. Late 2008, we went through a global pandemic. I mean, everyone got nailed. From Warren Buffett across the board to all the major companies, no one got out of the Great Recession basically unscathed. So I wrote the book in late 2009 and early 2010 from a voice of contrarianism, if there's such a word. I was sort of the lone wolf coming out of the Midwest that was ravaged. I came out of Michigan, where we saw GM go bankrupt. My grandfather and my father in their graves would be turning to watch one of the great titans of industry fail. Not a political call. They just got cocky. They fell, and the final tipping point was the Great Recession. And I thought, damn it, we're tough. If we're an entrepreneur, like, that's our greatest gift as a United States country, is we're the innovators. We're sort of the crazy ones. You talk to any Canadians, they have lots of Canadian friends. They say, you guys are kind of crazy, eh? You're all kind of nuts down below the border. And they say that, you know, a little tongue-in-cheek. But if we're such an innovative country and we are very efficient and we work hard, then damn it, are we going to sit around for years and years and years and complain about what used to be? Because it was a bubble. So the book drips with this sort of bravado, this confidence that if you read it when it first came out in 2011, which most people didn't, which I'll get to here in a minute while we released the book and while we did an anniversary, those that read it said, damn, you're pretty confident. Have you seen what's going on around you? And yeah, I'm not naive. I had clients cancel contracts on me. I had people that shook hands and had signed agreements basically act like they were just, you know, light them up in flames. They didn't exist. And I saw the worst of capitalism. Everyone did globally. No one, again, got unscathed. But I also saw an opportunity, because typically when there's downturns, there are some entrepreneurs that do even better because they think the exact opposite. When the whole market's going left, they're the one little lone duck going to the right. And here's where I want to start throwing it down at a deep, deep, very, very intense level for our audience. Because again, we might have some amateurs on the call that are new to this and are new to entrepreneurism, but I'm going to guess we have some serious vets listening in either live or down the line because of the ability to time shift. Here we go. Your attitude, your entrepreneurial genius, you have it. And I'm not blowing smoke. I've met and interviewed, like you, Denise, thousands of entrepreneurs, nonprofit leaders at all levels of startup to beginning growth to mid-level growth to long-established companies like, for example, Remax or John Deere. I've worked with some of their executives, and I can tell you this. Many of them are no smarter than you or I. They typically, you meet them and go, really, they're that successful. And if you got to hang around them a little bit longer, you'd find one core thread that is in all of them. They have not only a trail littered with failure, and that's not talked about in college, and I have a college degree, and I'm grateful for it. Here's my pivot point. College doesn't teach you that you're going to have to fail a lot to hit a few singles, doubles, triples, and home runs as the same baseball. And I think we've got a society, and this is going to be very judgmental, and damn right I'm going to throw it down because I'm not going to restrain today on this interview, that is afraid to fail. And if you look at the younger generations, the millennials under 35, they have been raised on failure. That's not a negative term. What I mean is they're used to setbacks, that you innovate, you start, you finish a project, you keep innovating. You don't let a setback or a no stop the project. The innovation keeps moving forward. And we have a whole group over 35. I'm a Gen Xer, Denise. I'm age 45, chronologically. I would be considered Gen X as a generational tag. Baby boomers are considered, I think, from about age 52 or 53 up to about, you know, that 70, 75. In that age group, there's a huge amount of them that still control the economy, that still have many years to work because lifespans are increasing. And you're seeing this sort of line drawn between the next wave of workers, the millennials, and the Xers and the boomers that are saying, hey, you know what? This is the way we've always done it. You know, you can't be successful. How are you innovating? What are you doing? And it's like everyone has this claim, this little battle that, you know, one generation's better than the other. I think it's time to end that. Each generation has different skill sets and wisdom and talents. At different points in history, they learn and were taught differently. They're also questioning now the status quo. So I know I'm going on kind of a rant here, but I really want to convey the central point, the flesh or the gasoline inside this book, is you have genius. Don't let anyone take it out of you. Don't let the critics and the trolls try to tell you you aren't brilliant. It doesn't mean that you're arrogant. There's a difference between being confident and cocky and being fair and firm with people. And I think what you find is people are starting to awaken, because now, by the power of technology, like we're doing this call, I'm in Idaho. I think you're down in the New Orleans area, if I'm correct, Denise. And we are literally, we've time-spaced, we're telewarped now, where we can communicate in real time. No tin cans, you know, 50 yards away in a tree like the old days. People can now hear this in real time. They can time shift and hear it an hour later after we're done. They can hear it a year later. They might excerpt pieces of it. We don't know where they're going to hear it or who's listening in real time at this marker at, you know, 4:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the 29th of, you know, December 2017. Someone might listen to it a year from now. And I just want to convey, I've seen this time and time again. You have a society that is very driven by large institutions that try to tell you to play it safe. That's the exact opposite of what's going on the underground current of the economy. Let me give you a few big company examples that should hit everyone listening right between the eyes. Look at your biggest companies in the world right now. I'll give you a few examples. Airbnb, Amazon, Uber, okay? Household names. Those three, besides Amazon, Amazon's the exception. They're an aggregator. They're sort of the intermediary. The other two or three I mentioned own nothing. They own nothing. And 3 or 4 years ago, they didn't exist. So they're basically an idea that someone had in their entrepreneurial genius mind to create out of thin air. And their market valuation is larger than many of the brick and mortar companies that have been around for 50, 75, or 100 years. So I say, in the court of entrepreneurial genius, that someone, you or I, has an idea or has a way to tweak a current product or service or innovate it, that entrepreneurial genius, in a way that if they believe they can do it, you'd be amazed what could happen. And I just look around and I just say, you know what, we're creatures of habit. And it's our duty, many times, through the power of self-development, personal development, and that's even gotten a bad rap, is to question the status quo. Something I tell all my children, I have four of them, Denise. I have a 20-year-old, 18-year-old, 15-year-old, and an 8-year-old stepdaughter. And all four of the amigos, particularly my three oldest, will tell you, if you ran into them or you talked to them on the phone or you texted them, what are some things your dad has taught you? And this is one that's straight out of the book, okay? They would say, well, one thing dad always says is, question everything and always think for yourself. And that's not me trying to be preachy at them. It's how I live. There are things that I used to believe that are complete nonsense to me now. There are things I'm learning that I go, wow, I didn't think that perspective. Wow, I'll take an opposing viewpoint and I'll read a paper. I'll listen to a podcast. I'll read a book that's the exact opposite of what I've been raised on. That's not to boast. It's to make me wider. It's to give me a stronger worldview, to keep my mind thinking and engaging that I don't have all the answers. And people, you know, foolishly assume when you write all kinds of books, you do media, that you know it all. I don't. I read constantly. I interview other authors. You know, we were talking about Larry Winget, Denise. I've interviewed Larry several times. I'm looking at his picture and some of his thank you notes on my desk. I've got his books on my shelf. Everyone has this entrepreneurial genius. So let's take it back. Why we re-released the book. The book came out, and I alluded to this about 5-10 minutes ago, and originally in early 2011. Sometimes the old joke is, tell God your plans and watch him laugh. And I was all excited. I think the second book you mentioned, the introduction you have, had broken multiple number ones in print back in, you know, the dark ages of Amazon, 2008. Okay, it was a different ballgame. We didn't have really ebooks going as crazy because it didn't come out until later in 2008. But here's what happened. I came writing that book, and as I mentioned to the audience, in 2009 and 2010, the manuscript was done. I was all excited. Then life crashed in. And this is right in the beginning of the book in the note to the reader section. Something called divorce. My wife had said, it's over. In September, a beautiful fall day in Michigan, hands me divorce papers, September 2010. Anyone that's been through that, or a major life challenge, or a diagnosis of cancer, or losing a child, divorce ranks right up there as one of those oh shit moments. And everyone's gotten those. Typically, if you've lived more than 25 or 30 years, you're going to have one of those moments already, or you're going to run into them. It's called life. And I thought, you know what? Great timing. I had just, the day before she had filed, actually, I stand corrected, the day after she'd filed, I got my first advance ever as a writer. Within 24 hours, one door shut, and the large door open where finally, after all these years of writing, a division of Amazon gave me an advance check as a writer for my audio and Kindle books. And I thought, what is the symbolism here? What is this strange irony, the joke that my personal life just went completely like nuclear bomb, you know, DEFCON 1, and then within 24 hours, my speaking and writing career finally gets the break it had worked for myself and many opportunities all these years later occurs within the same 24 hours. It was a real mind shift. It was frustrating. It was like the worst sort of paradoxical heartbreak you could have. And I remember that next day walking in the kitchen, my wife was there and the kids were running around the backyard. I said, hey, here you go. Here's the mail. And she looked at me. She goes, what is this? I said, well, I got an advance check from Amazon finally. And I walked out of the house like the most defeated man in the world. Now, I'm not telling our audience that for sympathy points. I'm just being real today. Maybe it's the end of the year. 2017 was a goofy year. Not all bad, but it was an odd year. I don't know. We all have our own interpretation, our own lens of reality. But this is a strange year for me. Kind of echoes what happened in late 2010. What should have been an exciting time with an advance after all these years of writing and sacrifice and time away from the family and speaking and teaching was cut short by a divorce. That's a major detour in your life and goal plan. You got to reset the whole thing. And then I thought, you know what? Put a book out. So under the cover of night, literally February 2011, fast forward 4 months, the book comes out. And I have all these great expectations, but the enemy was my mind. There was no place to release a book, but it needed to be released. It was losing its sense of freshness. I was eager to get it out there. I was excited, aka impatient. The book comes out to a resounding thud. Some people that are fans of mine can still hear it. The thud was the book didn't chart, worth a crap. It never even made, I think, the top 50. We did it sort of haphazardly to rush the book out there because I was impatient. A few people read it, but a whole lot more never heard of it, never read it, and didn't care. Fast forward, I get a text at the beginning of this year, January 2017. A gentleman by the name of David Keel out of Yuma, Arizona. Big REMAX guy, great friend, he's been my friend, sends me a text, says, Tony, I read all your books, by far, book three is your best. And I thought, damn it, there it is again, Denise. People keep going back to that one. It was written when I was at a real peak state, you know, maybe a little bit bold and bravado and, you know, maybe too confident, a little cocky, and it got buried. And some people that are true fans, which I'm always grateful for the gift of time and attention, have read all my stuff. I said, that's the one. I said, all right, this is going to stop. We're going to dust off the book. We're going to re-look at it, reimagine the cover design. The original cover is horrible, okay? Again, there's an example of rushing a book to the market. We went and redesigned the front and back jacket. I'll give a kudos to Brad Zales, our mutual friend
Brad,
in New York.
Brilliant
thought leader.
Yep, he does gorgeous work.
Yep, so Brad, brilliant Brad, he's genius with design as well, redesigned the cover of the back jacket. I rewrote an introduction to the book, did a little bit of editing, redesign. We said, look, let's put on an anniversary edition. So October of this year, 2017, we re-released the book, did very, very well from the perspective of getting the message out there, generated interest, and also we had a chance to give that third book in the series a second breath of fresh air 7 years later, and almost maybe 9-10 years after it was originally conceived and manuscripted. So it's fun to do that and really kind of bring back that attitude when you reread the manuscript to kind of say, you know, wow, what really was I thinking back then? And sometimes you're like embarrassed. I'll be candid, like, what was I thinking? This book, to me, when I reread it again in early January of this year, I thought, damn, there's a lot of stuff here that I'm proud of. Not in a, you know, arrogant, you know, pride kind of way, but I'm proud from the perspective that it stood up the test of time. And now that we're in a much better economy compared to 2008 to 2010, the book to me kind of got me fired up again, Denise. It was weird rereading the book here. I'm like, gosh, if I didn't know I wrote this, I'd be like, let's go out and grow and let's get that idea going. Let's start that business. Let's go out and talk to our customers and do better customer service. So it was weird to reread the book with that lens and look at the timeline almost 9-10 years later that it stood the test of time. And it's not just me, it's people that I reference in the book, the different books that I read in the formations of 2007 to 2010 that influenced me when I wrote my own points in the book, my own stories with my teacher's points. So it's full circle. We're at the end of another, you know, calendar year as we tape this. And I'm walking around my office right now pacing because I'm excited. And this topic, this book, that's the type of energy that oozes from it. There's also a couple chapters in the book that we may or may not have time to talk about that are very deep. They're spiritual. And I got some flack, Denise, about intermixing spirituality and God with business. You know what? I don't care. The critics can go write their own damn books. Life and spirituality and business, to me, all intersect. If we're a mobile society that's very interconnected, you really can't divide those lines. You can't silo them. And I'm okay with that, Denise. I don't preach from the stage. Well, maybe I preach. I teach. But I can no longer at this age, at 45 years of my life, say, you know what, I'm embarrassed to talk about my faith walk. Or you know what, if I'm talking to a secular business group, if I say God or the higher power, to be worried that I'm going to get in trouble or get the hook off the stage. And I also am very respectful to say, look, some of you don't believe. If you're an atheist, think about what I just said on your way home or your drive back to the office. And I get everybody laughing. It's not to offend, but it's knowing that I'm going to offend someone because we're in such a politically correct PC world where everyone wants to be, you know, well, you're offended me. Well, I'm sorry. If you're a human, you're going to tick somebody off. If you have great ideas, count on rebellion. Count on people not rolling the red carpet out. And I'm on a rant right now because I'm speaking without script. This is how life works, Denise. You get it. You've interviewed the best in the world. When you've had some miles called years of experience, you get a little bit more emboldened to say, you know what? I got to be me. When I'm myself, I'm going to draw the right people and I'm going to repel the right people away conversely. So how's that?
That is, you're not getting an argument from me. I'm on board with everything you're saying. Look, I'm the same way. You can like me or not. It's really no, it doesn't matter to me. I honestly don't care. You can't hurt my feelings because I'm in charge of me and I always will be. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can attack, you can do whatever you want, and I'll probably just blow you a kiss and go about my business and forget all about you. That's how I operate that. But, yep. You know, I mean, I think we all want people to like, admire, respect us, but it's not going to happen. So you have to be reasonable and rational and do the best you can, help as many people as you can, solve as many problems as you can, show up every day and be your best. And if somebody doesn't like that, heck with them.
True. Growth.
Absolutely.
Growth.
You're preaching to the choir here.
Well, thank you, my friend.
Okay, so let's go a little bit deeper, and I love how passionate you are about this today. So you had mentioned a couple of chapters that we may not have time. Do you want to dive into those, or do you want to just keep on going with your current thoughts?
Let me bring up a couple key points. This is from the beginning of the book, and it involves Jeff Bezos. And thank you for letting me kind of run free. I've never done an interview where you kind of just let me teach.
No, go.
Everyone, if I want to share this with our audience live and, you know, time shifted later down the road. Life is not scripted. So, yes, absolutely. I did give you some prepared questions that are a choice if you want to ask them. But I love to free range. And it reminds me, I've interviewed Seth Godin. Seth Godin, a couple times I've been on the phone with him, and he's a genius. He lives it and breathes it. We free range with Seth. He doesn't want questions, so we just go. So I feel like, okay, let's free range. It's the end of the year, and let's rock. I want to talk about Jeff Bezos for a second. And there's a powerful story that I share live that I also put into this book. And I'll give our global audience a little bit more of a shorter version. May of 2008, I went to Book Expo America with my publisher, Morgan James. And we were shopping the second book, you know, doing some preview, some media, for the book launch in August of the second Mind Capture. And little did I know, like the movie Forrest Gump, Tom Hanks is the main character, Forrest, in that movie, Forrest bumps into famous people in interesting historical situations almost on accident. He's like the accidental background guy in all these different incidents or, you know, opportunities. And look at the program, Denise. And it says Jeff Bezos from Amazon speaking at like 12 o'clock. I went, you're kidding me. And I have a rule that when a billionaire speaks, Tony listens. So I'm like there right when they open the doors. I get right in the front row. Jeff Bezos walks in. You know, I got there early to get my seat up front. Had a chance to interact with him for about 20, 30 seconds, get a photo with him. He autographed a copy of Wired magazine, which I'm looking at right in my office. So I'm not afraid to ask. It was neat to meet a billionaire. He does have an entourage. At that level, you move markets, you have handlers. It's just a part of that way of life at that upper level, how the other 1% lives, okay? And it's not a knock. It's just you have a lot of influence is my point. And I didn't know that day he talked about a product brand new to the world, the first time he had spoke at Book Expo in many years, that he thought might do okay called Kindle. Hello, I think that product has done pretty darn well. And it was fascinating to watch, almost like a TED Talk or the late, great Steve Jobs when he would do an Apple debut launch, how Jobs would do a presentation. So Bezos was up in the front. You had probably 800 to 900 people in the room. You had a lot of his competitors in the room, Barnes & Noble. You had a lot of the press corps, obviously, from around the world. You had lots of writers and publishing folks and entrepreneurs in the room. And I'll never forget what he said at the end. And it was worth the price of going to L.A. for those 2-3 days just out of this one tip he said. Paraphrase what he said near the end of his keynote presentation. He said, look, I know many of you are entrepreneurs, you're writers, some of you are my competitors, and he looked right in the front rows. He's got the major buyers from Barnes & Noble and Borders at the time. These people don't like him. He's like the great Satan. He's their competitor. And he said, you know, I want to give you one piece of advice as I'm done here today. He said, sometimes you have to be willing to be misunderstood. Let me repeat that for our global audience, Denise, and your fans and your listeners. Sometimes you have to be willing to be misunderstood. That day in May, 2008, Los Angeles, California, message shot, message received. That's how I look at entrepreneurs. And I say, everyone's an entrepreneur. And I know when I talk to nonprofit leaders, I've done full-day marketing sessions for United Way. And I might have 60 nonprofit directors, executive directors sit in the audience that in the first 5 minutes, I have to literally exercise out of them that it's okay to say the word marketing, that you are in marketing and that you have ideas. That's entrepreneurship. And a lot of them don't get it because they've been told that marketing and entrepreneurship is a bad thing. And I have to tell them and remind them sternly, but you know, kind of like a loving parent, it's okay to admit that we're in marketing. And it's funny, after about a half hour with all these nonprofit leaders and I have a full day with them, they actually like to think that they're marketers. And they say, it's okay. And I say, you know what? You're basically like an entrepreneur. You just don't know it. And many of them come around and here's what they tell me. We get it now. We have to market. We have to hustle. We have to show that we have value in the marketplace because there are lots of other nonprofits in our own market area that are competing against us. So if you're in academia and you're listening, if you're the director of the Red Cross or the Habitat for Humanity in your local area, whatever nonprofit you're in, the nonprofits the last 5 years, I'm glad to see this, have stepped up, provide better services to be more efficient and get better at marketing. That is entrepreneurship, Denise. The world's changed. Ministers, I see priests, I see CPAs, I see lawyers, doctors in my audiences. If I'm doing a Chamber of Commerce program, for example, or if I'm speaking at a nonprofit state meeting, they might have all sorts of industries in the room. And what I'm seeing is they're all hungry to learn how to outthink, how to innovate, how to tap their inner entrepreneur genius to keep moving the organization forward, to keep growing, to keep serving more customers, to keep innovating. To add more employees, to train their people to think more entrepreneurial. The revolution's happening, and it's happening quickly. And again, when I went back and, you know, dusted off the original book and reread it at the beginning of the year, I thought, man, this book in many ways, not because I wrote it, but the principles in there are timeless, is even more relevant than when we wrote it back in, you know, originally 2009, 2010. Heck, I got on Facebook in 2009, okay? That was very, very new at that point. you look at a couple of the companies I mentioned to begin this interview, Denise, Airbnb, Uber, those companies didn't exist till a few years ago. They were someone's entrepreneurial idea. And look what happened. So what's going on right now, if you look at the economy, is speed to market is everything. And how you innovate, aka serve your customers, is going to be what's going to be, you're going to survive off that or you're going to decline off that. Let me repeat it. You're going to survive off that or you're going to decline off that. And everyone's in the game. It's the old adage that, you know, every morning in Africa, the gazelle wakes up and the slowest gazelle is either eaten or the lion doesn't eat. And I know that maybe sounds a little strange, but I want people to really understand this. Brian Tracy, who I interviewed a few years ago, taught me that by the year 2020, which we're almost there, information will double globally every 3 days. We are buried in information. What we need are people that can disseminate, synergize, and connect and innovate their entrepreneur genius to sort through that, to function and keep the economy moving. And that's the real challenge, is how do you look at this deluge of information on top of what I've been teaching and preaching, and I know in my soul for over 15 years, we're not a marketing attention warfare battle. It's not to scare people. Shock value, just turn on any television network for 5 minutes or news outlet, they'll shock you. What I mean is the marketing warfare is a battle for your mind, the battle for attention. I call it mind capture. And books like mine help to, I hope, inspire people that, hey, I don't have all the answers. My mentors don't have all the answers. You need to turn inward and understand you have some of the answers too. We need you to step up and discover your entrepreneur genius and share it and get it out there and know it's going to get beat up. It's going to be defied. It's going to be laughed at. Critics are going to think you're crazy. Good. If you have enough people thinking you're crazy, you're probably onto something. Let that sink in a minute. And typically, if it's your closest family members and some of your biggest industry peers, you're probably definitely onto something. Because many times we let people take away our greatness. We're conditioned as we age to mediocrity. That's one of my mentors taught me that. And I believe it. If we don't deliberately override and listen to podcasts like yours, read books, go to conferences, get on webinars, join mastermind groups, be part of a coaching program, get around people that are moving and living life full throttle and engaged, we stagnate. And you look at a lot of people in society, and again, this is going to be very judgmental because I see it. They relinquished their genius. They gave it up when they were 25, when they were maybe 30. Some fought till they were 40. Oh, I know. They relinquished their genius.
Yep. I honestly think, and this is just my personal observation, but watch a three-year-old. Three-year-olds are marketing mavens. They almost always get their own way. They are relentless. They are focused. They are determined. And they're going to get whatever it is they want, by golly. And, you know, they almost always do. But by the time they hit school, let's say first, second grade, they're turning into little stamped out clones, and it makes me sick. Again, personal observation, but I think it's earlier than you suspect it is.
Well, I agree, and I was being, you know, a little bit more about most adults, they give up. But you look at children now. I'm going to give you an example. It just struck me as you said it. My oldest, Paige, daughter, is 20, and I remember this would have been probably 10 or 11 years ago. We went and met with the teacher, and I was married to my first wife at the time, Kim. And I remember them, and I'm going to paraphrase this for speed and brevity here. So basically, we think your daughter has ADHD. You should put her on some Ritalin and medicate her. And I'm a little bit, like I said earlier, skeptical. It doesn't mean I'm, you know, trying to be a jerk, but I said, well, let's get another opinion. So I took her to the top psychologist in the area, and they did all the battery of tests. And about two or three weeks later, they come back, and I remember the doctor basically saying, look, your daughter's smarter than everybody in the building. I was like, wow, must get it for mom. You know, we kind of joked about that. He goes, I don't think she needs medication. She needs to get out of the school system. So we moved her into Montessori method. And again, reserve judgment here, because it's not for everybody. We put her into Montessori method, and she thrived. Didn't need drugs. She needed a different stimuli, a different way of learning, self-directed. My other two children, we tried Montessori with them. They didn't do well. It's a different way, a different structure. They're all brilliant. But what they tried to do was label, medicate, and just suppress. And I know they had good intentions, but the old adage, because sometimes good intentions lead to hell. I'm not saying these people were evil, but that's what we've done. Medicate away the genius. Albert Einstein, is very much documented throughout history that if he was in the modern school system today, they would have probably drugged him up by 4 or 5 years of age. He was not the traditional student. So thank you for helping me out on that. There's a lot of validity to what you just said, my friend.
Thank you. But I see it. I mean, they tried to do it to me because I am a self-starter, self-learner, and I'm an introvert. I hated school. And my poor mother was constantly being called to the school saying, Denise won't participate. Well, Denise was smarter than her teachers and knew it.
Yep.
In her arrogance, and wasn't shy about stating it. So if school was difficult for me, I hated it. I really did.
Mm-hmm. You're not alone. And I look now, and I had a Catholic education, which was good and challenging. And now that I'm older, I go, wow, there was a couple of full years I sat in the front of the room because I couldn't focus. I had a couple nuns that moved my desk to the front of the room because I couldn't sit still. I was kind of a nemesis. I thought, looking back now, wow, maybe I would have, been 10 years later, been medicated. But they let me get away with it, and they were patient with me. And I'm not saying all schools are bad. There are many great teachers. There are a lot of people that get wrapped into one envelope, but I had some very patient nuns in the Catholic school system that kind of let me do what I needed to do. But they said, all right, you can't disrupt the entire classroom. We're going to move you to the front. So that was the way they medicated me. But it seemed to have worked because I didn't take drugs growing up through that. And I was allowed to, my right brain is a musician and a writer and, playing sports. I was allowed to really take my gifts and do what I wanted to do and not have it restrained or medicated away. So I just thought of that, Denise. Interesting to go back in the archives of the mind.
I know, huh? But I think what you're saying here, Tony, is that we still can tap into that young childhood genius. We all have. We all have it. We're born with it. So it's not necessarily just gone, is it? It may be hidden under some layers, but excuse me, it's still there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's just fascinating. I think here's the counterbalance. There is much hope, and I have faith in this, okay? The internet. The internet is literally dismantling all sorts of blocked world. The blocked world was pre-1991, 92. The internet came on the scene more so public and started in 94. I know because I was in college in 94. In our senior year, we were doing a thing called email. I remember sending an email to Australia. The next day, we got a response. We're like, oh my gosh, we got a response from Australia. Think how funny that is now, 23 years later. We thought that was the coolest thing. We could send a message the next day. They responded back from Australia electronically. And you think about the internet and all the change, the innovation. It's just a fascinating world that we're in that you can't really hide information anymore. Ideas are now exchanged. And there's different viewpoints that can be basically shared, investigated, researched, beat up, torn apart, new ideas shared. This open source world prevents, a lot of the old ways of happening still. Here's the flip side, though. We have all this great information and content. Is what do you sort out what's real and what's relevant? Let me repeat that for the global audience. What's real and what's relevant? I joke because it ticks me off versus me doing an hour and a half lecture, which I don't like to do, is that we live in a world where everybody wants a 5-minute answer to a 10-year marketing problem. And they all think they can run on Google, and in 5 minutes, Google or Alexa can solve it. No. Dan Kennedy. Yes, the Dan Kennedy. If you're into marketing, Google his name. Dan S. Kennedy, one of the top marketing minds walking the planet as far as direct response copywriting, okay? My mentor, full disclosure. He'd say, look, people don't pay him because he, they can find him online. He's real cheap. They pay him because he's been writing copy for 40 years. They pay for his experience, his wisdom, his range, his research, his 40 years of accumulated knowledge and expertise and mastery and success versus trying to copy it in 5 minutes with a Google search. I think there's a lot of insight what he said there to me, and this is I've met with him at his home a couple of times, that people are looking for experts. They want the best in class. And you have to many times put your years of experience in, and people want to shortcut that. We're in a point and click, swipe left, swipe right, Amazon ship next day delivery, Amazon Prime world. And that's created an impatience gap that people want it solved now, 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 and you typically can't. And that's my biggest frustration I see in marketing, in innovation, entrepreneurship, is people are so impatient. They don't want to put in a couple years. They don't want to study. They don't want to go to conferences. They want to just pay for the shortcut now and magically hope that they can build a sustainable business. Sorry, Charlie, it doesn't work that way. You've got to put in the years and the homework and the time and the testing and the actual implementation in the marketplace to test it. Then you get what's called wisdom and experience. Does that make sense, Denise?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So those are a couple thoughts. The book, in respect to time, has a lot more how-to in it, and I reveal specific steps of how you spark the innovation, that genius in you. It doesn't just hit us every day where we're inspired. I'll be candid with you. The older I get, there are some days I'm not inspired. But what can I do to override that? We're creatures of what? Habit. And I look at that and see, you know what are some things I can deliberately do from other teachers that I share in the book? Brian Tracy has been a huge influence to me. You know, he's studied with the best. Why not let those that have put in the 30, 40 years that disseminate and know their stuff teach you? And then if you innovate on top of it and you find some success, share that as well. So the book is really sort of a best of. It's the best of some of my mentors. And I'm flipping through the back of the book here, and it has additional resources. And there's probably 75 to 100 different books in here that I've listed. Everything from Brian Tracy to Napoleon Hill to Jack Canfield, I think Larry Wingett's in here, our mutual friend. Bill Glazer, Scott McCain, I could name drop all day long, Bob Proctor, you know, Sally Hogshead. These are different mentors that I've studied with or read their material, listened to their podcast, have interviewed them. And there's no shortage. To me, in the age of Google and open source, ignorance is no longer an excuse. There's no reason for it. Someone right now, if they have Wi-Fi and a laptop or a phone, can access a global library that has never been seen in the history of mankind, ever. So what I try to do in all my writing and teaching this book is give you my perspective, my two cents on this thing called entrepreneurship. But also, almost to a fault, I've had other people in the industry say, look, you promote other people's stuff too much. Well, that's how I roll. Maybe I'm too Midwesterner. It's called manners. You give credit where credit is due, Denise. And I also don't have claim to all knowledge. That's called arrogance. And I love to put people down the rabbit hole. I, of course, would love it if they have mind capture. Okay? Check out my stuff, and if it resonates, great. Some people say, you know what? I like part of your stuff, but I read a couple of the books you recommended there, and they were better. Or they helped me with this particular issue or give me a different perspective. Good. That's why I love to share what mentors and teachers I'm with, past, present, and some that I'm currently researching and reviewing, and also what I'm doing. And again, it's just the challenge I've had for 14, 15 years, Denise, is a shameless promoter of other people's work, because mine is a small sliver in it. It's just, I know this. There's not a lot new in marketing. I'll just shift to that part of entrepreneurship for a second. There really isn't a lot new. There's different variations and tweaks, but there's also different ways that it's implemented. But most marketing systemically is 95% the same. A lot of it's human nature and common sense. People, they think, wow, marketing's so complex. No, it's really not that difficult. We get all tripped up because technology changes, because the speed of the game has changed, because we're shiny. I call it ADD, digital ADD, advertising deficit disorder. And it's tough because as I've been walking and looking at the book a little bit here while we're doing this interview, or me kind of doing a teaching per se, I've been doing most of the talking, is I'm looking at my laptop. I'm like, don't look at the messages that are popping up. Don't look down at your phone. Stay focused. So the book is also a very, very loud, you know, sort of, you know, scream out of the woods, if you would picture this, saying, focus on you. Shut some of the digital noise off. I advocate several things in there. I'm going to give a couple of advanced tips right now. Anyone in the audience can use right now. Here's a couple ways you get things done at a high, high level that most people won't reveal. And again, they're not secrets. They're just common sense. Go dark. Many times I'm under writing deadlines, Denise. I'm sure you do this as well because you're very, very efficient and productive. I shut all my digital off, and you can't find me for hours, and it ticks my wife, my kids, business associates off. They're like, oh, Dad must have been. Yep, I have a writing deadline. or I have a copywriting project, or I have to sit down and write, and I can't have anyone bother me, and you won't find me. And people go, wow, isn't that hard to do? Yeah. Is it necessary? Absolutely. I give everyone listening right now permission to shut your phone off, to put it on quiet mode, and to shut all your sensors off, to shut your laptop off, grab a pen and paper, go to the library, go to Starbucks, put on some music, and focus on your inner genius. That's how the most efficient people I've ever met, a consistent pattern or a clue of success, is they go dark. In a digital world, that's very, very hard to do. The second thing I want to share with your audience, to add some value here, because it's been a little bit more about mindset, this interview, or really this time together, is think on paper. Brian Tracy calls it mindstorming. Take something that's either frustrating you or something that excites you and come up with 10 reasons how you can make it better or 10 ideas off it. Let me give an example. Let's say you have a business partnership that goes bad and one of your business partner messes you over. Instead of getting mad about it, write down on a piece of paper, what are 10 things that I learned from this business partnership going bad? That's very contrarian type of thinking. It also redirects your brain to find the lesson from the letdown. Let me repeat that. What is the lesson from the letdown? Tony Robbins calls it the power of the questions. The questions you ask dictate the quality of your life. He's absolutely right. So if we have this brilliant thing called the mind, inner genius, why not program it for good? I mean, it sounds kind of like Superman there, the theme of Superman. But seriously, most media and news around you is negative. It's known, 95% negative and fear-based. You have to deliberately hijack your mind, capture attention, go dark, grab a pen and paper, and focus on your inner genius. So I know that's a lot there, the last 2 or 3 minutes, but those principles work. The book has obviously more ideas in there. I'd love to have people check the book out. But if you say, hey, you know what, I got enough from this guy, take one or two of those I just shared and go with it and run with it.
Listen, I go dark, and I do it deliberately. Mm-hmm. I will literally, I'm not much for using my cell phone anyway. In fact, there's only about 5 people in the world. Our friend Brad is one of the very few people who even has that phone number. I protect it. It's just, I don't want people bugging me. But I will take my desk, you know, I have a landline still. I probably will have it for quite a while. I'm very attached to it. I will take it off the hook. I will shut everything down. And when I'm concentrating on something, I don't allow anybody to get to me. Now, I've already, you know, I've done my due diligence. I've let people know if they need to know, you're not going to be able to reach me until 12:30 or 3:30 or whatever it is. I'll get back with you. But I do that frequently. And I will also, and I do this a lot, Tony, I will walk off. You know, I know when I'm getting tired. I know when I'm starting to shallow breathe. I know when a problem is kind of circling my mind and bugging me. I will go outside in this gorgeous fairy tale of a backyard I've got, kick off my shoes, and it doesn't matter if we're in full-on mud season. I will kick off my shoes, dig my toes into the ground, and ground myself under those pecan trees. And I will do this, you know, series of breathing exercises that I've got. All of a sudden, all better. But I have to focus everything I've got on grounding myself and breathing. And then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, I got this.
Absolutely. Well, it's a little known technique or strategy that you just mentioned, where you go off the grid and you reconnect with nature. And this is not new agey, it's known. When you go outside and get fresh air, if you look at the history of Steve Jobs, I know he's talked about a lot, but his biography, Walter Isaacson, that wrote that and talked about the life of Steve Jobs. Jobs was notorious, one of the richest, most genius men in the world. Not perfect, by the way. Had a lot of flaws, but damn it, he did change the world, whether you like it or not. I'm on an iPhone right now, so Steve's, you know, legend lives on, okay? But here's the deal. Jobs would walk all the time, multiple times throughout the day. He'd have people he was going to talk to about ideas. They'd go walk around the block for hours at a time. There's a reason you get out away from the noise. He was very, very much, a lot of his philosophy from what the writers describe was almost Buddhist, very much into, you know, free your mind up, into breathing, nature. Those things are universally known. Buddhist monks do it. Christian monks do it. Friars. You connect with nature. When we hang up this phone, this interview is over. I'm looking at beautiful snowflakes here in North Idaho. I call it Narnia, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Yes, that's a shameless plug because I love it here. I'm going to walk out of my office 2 blocks to a place called Tubbs Hill. It's a 2.3-mile hike around a hill looking at a lake. Snow is beautiful. I won't have my phone on me. I'm going to just walk. I'm going to detune my brain because there's a big weekend coming up. It's been a long week. I need to turn my brain off. And I can't tell you, and Denise, you would know this, but a lot of people don't get this. Many times I'll get done walking down the hill, and I'll get a download moment where all of a sudden an idea will hit me. I'll get walk right back to my office, and poof, out of nowhere, an idea hits me, or I'm reinvigorated because there's fresh air. But I've deliberately turned the digital noise off, the distraction, to go commune with nature. Some people call it walking meditation. To me, it's healthy. It gets my blood moving, and I can focus on nothing and just take the beauty, and all of a sudden I come back recharged. So there are some techniques that all entrepreneurs should employ versus I got to work 7 days a week, 15 hours a day. Sometimes, yeah, you're going to get imbalanced. There's no such thing as balance when you're an entrepreneur. What you shoot for, and Ivan Meisner, the founder of BNI, taught me this in one of our interviews, is you shoot for harmony. Beautiful word, harmony. Because life balance is the biggest crock of shit. It doesn't exist. It doesn't.
I know.
Entrepreneurs know this.
It does not.
And that's in my next book. You know, Life Balance is a Bunch of Shit by Mind Capture author Tony Robleski. Because you're going to have periods where you have too much rest and recovery. You're going to have periods where you're running hard on deadlines for months on end. You're going to be writing a book. You're going to be freaking out. Then you're going to have time we need to recharge. But you shoot for harmony. Because if you want an ordinary life, don't be an entrepreneur. It's typically not. But I will tell you, people think that entrepreneurship's tough. I couldn't do it. I would have it no other way. And it's not for everybody, but I'd rather have a life of creation, of sharing ideas, of thinking for myself, and maybe not following lockstep what everyone else is doing. And that's not a criticism on people that work for companies. Let me be very clear, because I speak to lots of corporations of all shapes and sizes. And I'm very much a loose cannon on stage. I'm like, look, you've already paid me. I'm going to tell you what I think. You may like it, you may not. If you work for a company, you are an intrapreneur. What I mean by that is you are basically self-employed inside a larger unit or a mothership or a company. You've got to be bringing your best ideas to the table. So entrepreneurship to me doesn't just fall down silos of pure entrepreneurs. You think of like the Airbnbs or people that start up a company. No, everyone is an entrepreneur. That's why I think the book has resonated with nonprofit leaders. To spiritual people, they're like, look, I've got to be thinking, I might have the best faith, the best idea, the best fundraising thought on the planet to help my organization. But if I can't sell it and use entrepreneurial skills to create it and get it out there and pitch it, it's all for naught, because you're in a marketing battle of not only time and attention, but intense competition. So I know we have been on the line for about an hour, and it seems like 3 minutes. This is the old Einstein philosophy that, boy, if it's something you're not enjoying, a minute seems like an hour. If it's something you love, an hour seems like 1 minute. And you can tell I'm fired up. This to me is not a game. I'm passionate. You have to believe in it. You have to believe in your idea. You have to believe in your entrepreneur genius. If you don't, no one's going to sell it as well as you can. There's another little bonus tip for everybody listening. And you're going to ebb and flow, Denise. You're going to have seasons of harvest. You're going to have seasons of tragedy. You're going to have seasons of chaos. Seasons of adversity. Then you're going to fall back in a season of harvest. Absolutely. And I joked about it earlier, but 2017 was a very twilight zone year for me. There was some big business breakthroughs, but there was also some personal chaos, some things that needed to be addressed. And again, that's what Ivan taught me. You shoot for harmony. Balance, that I haven't had balance in a long, long time. And it's not because of, you know, a joke about, you know, medication, you're not balanced. Now, you got to be a little crazy. Here's the beautiful thing. You alluded to it 20 minutes ago. We all have the inner genius when we're children.
We do. We do.
We have it. Watch little kids. They're brilliant. I talk about some examples in the book of my children. They were younger and some of the questions they asked me. And, you know, people say that's shameless. Darn right it is, because it's too good not to share. And I look at it and go, wow, they get it. They're little marketing Jedis. They're born with that open mind. They question everything. They don't see limitation. They laugh at our folly because we're adults. We're professionals. We've always done it that way. Kids are like, that's just dumb, Dad. So as a student of life, children leave a lot of clues. There are many of us that are, you know, we're walking around in grown-up bodies, but deep down we're 6 and 7 year olds. I will often tell groups that deep down we all want to be a little kid again. we've forgotten to go back to the inner genius and visit that part of ourself that we suppressed, we've forgotten about. And a lot of that thinking is woven in this book. So I want to thank you again. I don't know how much more time we've got, but it's just been one of those rare off the cuff, like we're having a cup of coffee at Starbucks and I can't shut up moments today.
Listen, I'm enjoying. We're about to stop broadcasting live, but we are still recording. So if you can stay with me just a couple more minutes.
Yeah.
I would love that. But you said something so important about children, you know, watching the genius of children. And I may go off a little bit off the reservation here, but when you're watching children, when you are a child, we all had that imaginary friend that we spoke to who was always with us, who, you know, slept in our bed, who protected us from the monster in the closet. And I liken that to, you know, who was it? Napoleon Hill, who had his board of directors. He had imaginary conversations with
yep.
some very famous people. And I truly believe, Tony, that I have a board of directors. I talk to them. One is named Jeeves. He rides in the car with me, keeps me safe. I kid you not. Jeeves has been around for a very long time, and it may be disrespectful to call him Jeeves. I don't know. But he doesn't seem to mind. And every time I get in the car, I say, okay, Jeeves, this is where we're going. And mm-hmm. I fully intend to get there safely, find the best parking. And you know what? I always get there safely and I always find the best parking. But I have set that intention. I've sent it out to the universe, to my board of directors. I find, Tony, and I'm curious to see if you find this too, that when you're listening, when you've turned over something to your universe, whatever your universe looks like to you, I can literally hear the answer pop into my head in my left ear. It's the darndest thing.
Mm-hmm.
When I hear, and it's my own voice, you know, I'm not hearing ghosts or anything, but when I hear, okay, Denise, this is what we're going to do, not what I'm going to do, this is what we're going to do, that's my inner guidance. That's, you know,
absolutely.
That's me going, okay, I hear you, I got it. And you know what? If I don't go act on it, I always regret it. Always.
Well, I'm going to go and build off what you said, Denise. I'm glad we had this last couple minutes here. The spirit world is very, very real. Intuition, the Holy
yes.
Spirit, how people define it. I want to throw out some stuff that I'm looking at my bookshelf right now, and these are also referenced in the back of the book. The Master Key System, Charles Haynell. It was way up in the Masons world, long before Napoleon Hill. Napoleon Hill was studying Charles Haynell, the Master Key System. You look at Florence Shinn, a great metaphysical writer, in the 30s, 40s, and maybe go back to 20s, her genius. You have other writers out there, Napoleon Hill, as you mentioned. You have modern-day ones such as Eckhart Tolle. I'm a big fan of studying the subconscious. It's very much known that, you know, Henry Ford and many of the great inventors back in the early turn of the century would go sit for ideas. They'd shut the light off, keep the room silent, or they'd go take a walk. And all of a sudden, like I alluded to, the ideas slow down. You can definitely anchor or program something in your mind before you go to sleep each night. So, look, help me solve this problem, Lord, or Great Spirit. And you can wake up in the middle of the night, and the idea is right there. Or the next day in the shower, all of a sudden,
every morning,
there it is.
318. I turn it over to my subconscious for review before I go to sleep,
yep.
and I guarantee you, 318, I wake up and go, aha, without fail.
Yep. You know, Wayne Dyer talks about it, other great spiritual leaders. That's why I think, to me, when you blend them together, and again, it's not per se you need to be a Christian or a Buddhist or an atheist or a pagan follower or a Wiccan witch, is when you let your inner self, your inner genius, quiet or speak to you or meditate or the Holy Spirit, or maybe it's your walk in nature. Many times that's how great entrepreneurs get those additional ideas, is they turn it inward versus always looking outward. And that's a big mistake. I noticed this year in certain parts of my business, I asked for sometimes too much advice, and I wasn't listening to myself. I had to sometimes say, step back, Tony, trust your inner genius. You're being advised to death with too much advice. Turn it back over, pray on it, write your goals down, sit on it, go take a walk, and then you make a decision by a certain date. Turn it over to your subconscious as well. And many times you get the answers you're looking for because we give too much influence and power to the outside external. Other people's opinions, the critics, our peers, our teachers, not that they're all bad intention, but a lot of times they're going to play it safe. if you're going to positively disrupt or innovate or use your genius, it comes typically from within, not from the external. So I know that's a little heavy there, but I've seen it. I live it each day.
So do I. And honestly, the people that I hang around with, we all feel the same way. We're all noticing the same things. Either we have always noticed it and just didn't, you know, maybe understand that it's not normal for some people, and we're just now kind of defining what it is that drives us and what kind of grounds us. But most of the people I know do exactly the same thing at one level or another, and I think it's very important. We are spiritual beings. We are energy. We can't just wake up every day, put your shoes on, plod around, go back to bed, and think, is this all there is? It's not all there is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I want to thank you again for inviting me on. This has just been, you know, end of your treat. I don't usually get this, you know, fired up. But you said, look, you're going to do most of the talking, Tony. Go for it.
You're it. This is your show. It has been such a pleasure having you here today. I have learned so much, and I really thank you for being such a great guest, teacher, whatever you want to term it, for this end of the year show. And listen, before we go, Tony, where can people find you on the web?
Well, thank you, Denise. Really, as you go to mindcapturegroup.com. So mindcapturegroup.com. The book we talked about today, if people click on books, you'll see the light bulb on the front. Brad Zales, again, nice plug for him, did the cover. There's some promos that we have. We're throwing in some free bonuses. I'll sign copies of the book, but check out mindcapturegroup.com to check into the rabbit hole known as Mind Capture. And if you want the new book, just click on the tab marked books. But keep up the good work, my friend. You know, the end of the year guy, and I was excited. I said, we got Denise at the end of the month. This is going to be fun.
Thank you. And, you know, normally this is where I, you know, say, okay, this is where this episode is sponsored by my company. I am not going to ruin the moment. I just want everybody to look for us in iTunes. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Go find Tony on the web. Connect with him on Facebook, wherever he is. Read his book. Tony, thank you so much. And
you're
listen,
welcome.
Happy New Year to you, your loved ones, and everybody in our audience. I wish you a wonderful and blessed 2018.
Ditto's back at you. Take care, Denise.
You too.
Bye-bye.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.